Welcome to Extremely Interesting Interviews with Ordinary People, the podcast that uncovers extraordinary stories from the lives of everyday individuals. We invite you to join us on a captivating journey. In every episode, we delve deep into the personal journeys of our guests, exploring the challenges they've faced, the lessons they've learned, and the triumphs they've celebrated. Their stories will touch your heart, broaden your perspective, and remind you of the incredible resilience, creativity, and courage that lies within us all.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Extremely Interesting Interviews with Ordinary People, the podcast that explores the fascinating stories of everyday individuals, the show that finds the marvelous in the mundane, and I'm your host, Mike Black. Today, we have a very special guest joining us, Chris Morgan. Now, Chris, are you with Altice or Suddenlink or Optimum? What's the name of the company now?
Altice is the parent company. Optimum is the brand name.
Okay.
So I guess Suddenlink used to be the legacy name. So I guess all three, really.
Okay. So Chris is the, now correct me if I get this wrong, but you're the director of program management now, aren't you?
Yes.
And he is a seasoned professional in the field of communications, telecommunications. Been an instrumental figure in the growth and innovation of Altice, Optimum, Suddenlink, the whole umbrella, which they are a global leader in the world of technology and telecommunications. And he has a wealth of knowledge and experience. So Chris brings a unique perspective to the table. And like we were talking earlier, Chris, anybody can look at a LinkedIn profile and see what you do. But I'm interested in who Chris is. So welcome to the show, Chris.
Thank you. Happy to be here, Mike. Appreciate it.
Thank you. I appreciate you being here. I truly do. In full disclosure, Chris and I have known each other for several years. I consider Chris a friend. And my whole point of this show is to have discussions with people that I admire. And I totally admire Chris. So, Chris, we've all done those. We've interviewed people and for job interviews. And both of us, everybody's set for interviews before. And you always get that question. And I hate this question. But it's, so tell me about yourself. And I hate that question, so I will not do that to you today. So I'm gonna throw you some slow balls first to get us started. So Chris, how old are you?
I am 34 years old. I'll be 35 in June.
And what motivates you?
Really, it's just taking care of my family. Taking care of my family, making sure my wife, my kids are happy, they're supported, they're taken care of. That's my ultimate motivation.
Awesome. And I agree that is the best one. So being in leadership roles for a while now, what leadership qualities do you think are the most important in today's business world?
Really, if you just take a step back, it all boils down to the simple concept of taking care of people. And what good am I of a leader if I don't have a team that's healthy and happy and thriving that I work with and work alongside? So at the meat of it, there's a lot of folks out there that are smarter than me. There's a lot of folks out there that may be more innovative. But to me, it's about taking care of the culture that I can control in my direct team, cultivating that, making sure everyone is comfortable and everyone feels accepted. And I think when people are happy, attendance tends to be better output. And so the productivity's there. I don't have to push folks because they're happy enough to come in generally and say, I want to do a good job. I have a healthy balance. This team culture is good. And I don't mind working alongside this guy and trying to get, the results that we want to gain collectively. So that's the key trait. And then communication, really, it boils down to folks understanding why I'm asking them to do a particular thing. And what's the benefit of it, not only to them, but also the benefit to our larger goals that we have to achieve together.
Yeah.
Now, so those things matter.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but that leads me to my next question. And that's, how do you balance that? Because, the needs of the team and the demands of the organization, their goals are not always the same. So how do you get everybody in step and moving in that same direction?
Yeah, you're right. I think first and foremost, everyone realizes that everyone else has a boss. So I may be someone's boss, but everyone also recognizes that I have a boss and my boss has a boss, and ultimately even the CEO is accountable to the shareholders, right? So
right.
Everyone has someone that they're accountable to, and most professionals understand that. And so there are times where things can become demanding and things can become stressful and tenuous on the team, and you have to make those withdrawals, so to speak, against the team. But in times where they normal out, we make sure we make healthy deposits too. You know, hey, you had a great week of work. Let's go ahead and cut out a little bit early today. You know, on the house, you know, don't worry about putting in any PTO. Those type of things, as you deposit into your employees when you have the opportunities, when it's time to make a withdrawal, you better not be in the negative or you're going to have some trouble.
Right. And like I said, full disclosure, Chris and I have known each other for several years. And a couple of those years, I actually worked for Chris. And he was my boss. And I'm telling you, he's the kind of leader that you would... I personally would have climbed the steepest hill and the tallest hill for you, because Chris is very much that way about putting in deposits, as you put it. That's a really good way of putting it. It reminds me of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, where it talks about the love bank.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, so there's that love bank that you can make deposits in, you can make withdrawals from, and you definitely right. made deposits in that work bank that we had there. And like I said, I've always admired you. So as a leader, what's the most difficult decision you've ever had to make, and how do you approach it?
That's a tough one. Trying to think back.
Mm-hmm.
Difficult decisions usually come around, honestly, hiring. So when you have a team that's very talented and there are opportunities, sometimes they're limited for promotions and things like that. And when you have a healthy team, there's a lot of interest usually garnered because folks are excited to grow and progress. And really, it's almost like splitting hairs, right? I have talented person A, a talented person B, C, D. And how do I elevate one without crushing the spirit of the others and continue to keep them motivated? Those are really the most challenging. I've been fortunate enough to not have to, you know, conduct any layoffs or anything like that. So I've been very fortunate in my career so far, knock on wood, that sustains. But really, I think it's the good thing. It's a good news story to be able to promote folks and those that are worthy and deserving. But oftentimes, when you have a solid team, there are multiple people that are deserving and you're really splitting hairs.
Yeah.
To elevate one, let the other people down easy, and to let them know, hey, this is not an opportunity to get discouraged. I recognize you. I see you. You're doing great work. However, we're just going in this direction. Those are really the most challenging. I don't try to be everyone's friend. I do recognize that as a leader and as a boss, I can't be friends with people
right.
necessarily. I can be friends with them, but I can't be everyone's friend. It's not my job to be buddy-buddy
right.
with everyone. But I do want everyone's respect, and I believe in honesty. And so as I'm honest and transparent with folks, I believe I've, you know, have everyone's respect enough to where they respect my decision and the choices that I make and not become a disgruntled employee after the fact. But it's still a delicate balance. It's very delicate.
Right. So somebody starting out and they've been promoted to a leadership role or a management position, what would be the key thing that you would tell them? Hey, it's like you pull them to the side and you say, look, I know you're new at this. I've been there. This is my advice to you. What would you tell them?
One, there's two things. So some folks are promoted in leadership positions when they go from a peer to a boss,
mm-hmm.
like the same team. And others are promoted and we're coming in from the outside in and you're leading a team brand new and everyone's fresh. So in the first situation, when you're going from a peer to a leader, the biggest thing is you already had the position. Don't come in like the big tough guy trying to assert yourself
right.
over your peer. And I think that's a mistake a lot of people make.
Mm-hmm.
You've earned it. If you've earned it and you have the respect of whoever hired you, you're going to garner the respect of your team. Some people will be more easily won over than others, but you don't have to come in swinging your weight around, so to speak.
Right.
That's the fastest way to lose somebody.
Oh yeah.
And so the biggest advice I'd give, if you elevate from a peer, coming from the outside in, just be fair. Come in, be neutral. It's not about trying to make friends with everyone or trying to pick favorites. come in, be neutral, and the first thing you should do is just learn and let your employees know, hey, I'm here to learn from you. You've been here for a while. This thing may not necessarily be broken, so I'm not going to come in and try to fix it from day one. Let me come and learn from you. Let me humble myself. Let me shadow you, sit with you. When people realize that you're really open-minded and willing to see the job and the world from their lens, coming in from the outside fresh versus just wanting to come in and making wholesale changes. Even if you do decide to make some changes later on, sure, that's fine. But at least you've taken the opportunity to sit down and see things from their perspective. That goes a long way with employees.
Oh, absolutely. And I know that as a project manager and having been a project manager for different types of projects and different types of groups, a lot of times a project, if you talk to a project manager, a project is a project is a project, but each project is different and you're living in a different environment when you're working in that project. So yep. I might be working construction one week. Next week, I may be, putting up servers or something. I may be handling a software rollout or something. So there's different things. Well, you can't be experts in all of them. So you really have to draw on the knowledge base of those people that you're guiding. And I think that that's a really good example of that, whereas you're bringing a manager in and, humbling yourself is a good way to put it. You humble yourself and say, hey, I want to know how this works. Teach me so that that I'm able to lead. So I think that's a really good point that you bring up there. So if, let's say I give you a time machine and you can go back in time. So what would the Chris Morgan, 36-year-old, 36, right?
35.
I was giving you a year.
Yeah.
So,
I feel it sometimes.
Right. So I give you a time machine today. To what time would you go back within your lifespan and to a younger self, to a younger Chris, and what would you tell them?
That's a great question, because the decisions I made, some boneheaded ones and some great ones, they've led me to where I am today, right?
Right.
So that's a great question. Let me think. I don't know, maybe high school me, but I don't want to change my journey really, because really and truly they led me to, the things I've done that led me to my wife and my family as is. And I don't know if I did things differently and I didn't go. So I went off to school first, left Texas, went to Mississippi for college for a couple of years, came back, finished up in Texas. My wife and I met in high school and we were friends in high school. But I didn't date her in high school, went off and was dating somebody else. But had I stayed in town and went to college here locally, would we have dated sooner and it didn't work out and now she's not my wife? I don't know the answer to that, right? So
that's fair.
So I may not have changed going off, but I would probably tell 18, 17-year-old me, be patient. Don't be too hard on yourself. It's okay to make mistakes.
Yeah.
It's okay to admit that you're wrong, and it's okay to ask for help. And I would probably tell myself that I tend to, as a younger person, shoulder a lot of things and internalize a lot of things, in part because I didn't want to let my family down.
Right.
And growing up and looking back on it now, I realized that, hey, you don't have to be so perfect. You don't have to be everything for everyone. And I would tell myself that it's okay to cut loose, have a little fun, make some mistakes and own it and move on. I think I would tell myself that, but I wouldn't want to alter the past because I'm afraid it may change the future.
Right. And that I'm a true believer in everything that I've done, good, bad, ugly, indifferent, everything that I've done in my life has led me to where I am right now. And right now where I am is where I should be,
Absolutely. Yep.
So I truly believe that and I agree with you on that, which leads me to the next question that I have for you, and which you've basically answered it, but what lesson have you learned that is priceless? And I think you just expounded on that when you were talking about what you would tell your younger self, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's priceless. And Really, I've also learned that. So my wife and I, we got married at, well, 10 years, it'll be 10 years in September. So at 25 years old, we got married. She got pregnant on our honeymoon. We had a tough time. She lost the first child,
Oh, that's
premature
terrible.
labor. Yep. And then we took a while to took a break. Young newlyweds to kind of really love each other and be with each other, support each other. And then we decided to try again, lost another one. So that was two losses. And then a miracle, we get pregnant with twins, right? We think we've got this one there. Everything's going to be great. We lost both twins, too. So young married couple with four losses early in life, trying to still figure each other out and love each other and navigate that. But, eventually, my wife had a great OBGYN who was supportive. Got pregnant, were able to figure out she had a weak cervix and were able to stitch that up, and he listened to her body as she would, discuss it. And now we have a son and a daughter, and everything's great, and we're done having kids. But things worked out the way they did. But the priceless moment that we learned in that is, as long as we have each other, we have everything that we need. And it was really It wasn't really an us against the world mentality because we did have a lot of support. But at the end of the day, I remember coming home. So with the twins, we lost one pretty early, and then she was in the hospital on bed rest trying to, get the other one far enough along to where he'd be viable. And we lost him, but he was alive for about an hour with a heartbeat. So we had to actually go through the process of getting a death certificate and having a service and finding a plot to bury him. And that was just things that you don't ever imagine.
As if it wasn't enough that you just lost a child, that now,
It's
you have to go through all this.
right, exactly. So that one, I remember coming home and being physically heartbroken, right? It's one thing to be emotionally heartbroken, but being physically heartbroken to the point where my chest hurts and I go to take a shower and just break down in the shower as a man, and then I come out and have to be strong for my wife, who's just a wreck, right? And so that was tough because she felt like a failure. And I had to just remind her, hey, we're in this together. Have each other. We have everything that we need. We're young, we're healthy, we're vibrant, we'll figure out what's going on and we'll overcome it. And I think that has strengthened our relationship to the point to where I don't know what could crack us, we're so strong, and that shaped my outlook on life too. A lot of things aren't that serious, right? So you work and things are hectic at work and you're stressed and you're this and you're that. But at the end of the day, is it that serious? Is it life and death? No, not. It's not. Things aren't that serious. So I can deal with the stress at work. I can deal with the stress outside because I have more value and more insight into what's really important. And what are the things that I should value the most? So when you asked me early on about my motivation, when I said it's my family, my wife and kids, that's what I mean. I know what it's like to lose. And so I know even more so what it's like to have what I have. And I'm so thankful and blessed that I have it, that it keeps me really, that really keeps me grounded. It really does.
It's a very good point you bring out there. And the I know when I think that losing puts a different perspective on everyone when you go through loss like that. And I know I've lost some things in my life, people that were, extremely important to me. And, in that loss, you learn what's truly important. And I think I've shared with you this saying that I have before, that's, the important things in life are those things that bleed, cry, and get hungry, and everything else can be replaced or fixed. And that is absolutely the truth. And I live by that. And it really helps put everything in perspective, because most stuff is not that important, as you put it, It's really not. So anyway, I know that was difficult for you to share, but I appreciate you doing so.
It can help someone, I'm sure. Right.
So absolutely. So you're this wonderful person, and I know that, and I know you have high moral standards, and and all that. You're a hard worker. You're smart. So what's your biggest fault?
My biggest fault.
Your biggest fault. Just peel that onion. Peel that onion back and just tell me the whole truth.
Let's see. Oh man, that's a good one, Mike. my biggest fault. Sometimes I'll tend to work too fast and oversimplify things, which I've gotten better at. Once you make a few mistakes doing that, right, it'll teach you. My wife says his lessons are always better bought than borrowed. Right? Once you bought them for yourself, you won't forget it. So she tells me that. That's one of her favorite sayings. So there's that, but a biggest, I don't know if I'd call that a fault. I think it's probably normal with a lot of folks.
Mm-hmm.
My biggest fault, I try to be a lot of things for a lot of people, and that's probably my biggest fault. I don't like telling people no. I've gotten better as I get older and have more family responsibilities, but even still, I try to fit everything into everything. And so I'm active in the church. I'm active at work. I'm active, with our affinity network, our employee resource group at Altice, and there's a lot of irons in the fire, right? It's hard for me to tell people no, and that's probably my biggest fault, is sometimes I can lose out on precious time, little things that I don't think are big things, and then, I get asked by, my daughter, hey, Daddy, how come you don't take me to school very often? How come Mommy always does it, right? And it matters to her. And so when I take her to school, it's just the best thing in the world for her.
Right.
I'm like, well, okay, I didn't think it was a big deal.
But it is to her, right.
Yeah, to her, it's a big deal. So making sure that I'm available enough and not stretching myself too thin to where, well, I'll say maybe not available enough, making sure I'm available to the people that matter the most.
Right.
Because if I'm making myself available to everyone, am I really available for
anyone?
We need it. Exactly. Right.
Yeah. So I've asked you some hard questions, and so no reason to stop now. So let's say you got to the end of your physical life, and God said, Chris, you were awesome. You were such a great dude. I'm going to give you one more day. What would you do on that day, and what wouldn't you do?
Well, first, I hope I'm in good health enough to enjoy my last day on Earth.
Mm-hmm.
So healthy, happy, aware of who I am and where I am.
Mm-hmm.
I'd want to surround it with family, whatever family that is. I don't know if I'll be a grandfather. I don't know if he'd be a great-grandfather at that point in time.
Right.
Or if my wife will still be here, but I want it to be surrounded with family, because that means the absolute most to me. And hopefully I could just be, live to be an old man that I can sit around and enjoy the fruits of my loins, right? My grandkids, my kids, my great grandkids. And that's how you know that you're rich and you're wealthy. Some people define it as monetary wealth, but my grandfather this past year had back surgery, and, a strong man, proud man, having to be down like that. This is actually his second back surgery, but the previous one was like 15 years earlier. So the older you get, more time to recover.
Mm-hmm.
I said, man, as I thought about it, me, my brothers pitched in and helped out. His sons pitched in and helped out. My mom pitched in and helped out. I was like, man, this guy's rich, not financially, but to have family here that'll just drop everything to help him out, to help the man bathe and to help him do basic things, put socks on and stuff like that. That's a rich man, because
I was going to say that he may not have money, but that is a very wealthy man.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the richest man in the world. He talks Warren Buffett in that moment because, wow, he has everything he needs. He's raised a family enough that will pour into him what he's poured out into us.
Right.
That's what I want. And so for my last day, it would be being with family together. We're happy. Feeling loved and being surrounded by the people that matter the most.
Awesome. And that's a good answer. So what wouldn't you do? What is something you just wouldn't do? You have one more day and you go, you know what? I am not mowing the yard today.
I wouldn't work. I can guarantee that. I wouldn't work. I wouldn't join a team's call. I wouldn't
Right.
look at an email. I wouldn't do anything. I would just soak up what really matters, because
Right.
we spend so much time working, so much time problem solving for other people. And when you work 5 days a week, 5+ days a week, do we really have time to unwind on the weekends, or is the weekend we're just catching up? Really, we're just catching up on what we couldn't finish throughout the week.
Yeah,
So I wouldn't work, promise you that.
it's sad that we spend so much time, and not sad, but it in a way, it's sad that we spend more time with people that we work with than
Oh,
people that
yeah.
we live with,
Yeah, it's unfortunate. I mean, really, that's what it boils down to is, as a society, which is great, we want to be productive, fine, but it's hard to find really good balance and strike that balance as a society. We work a lot.
So I got one more question for you, because I don't want to
Okay.
take all your time, because you don't have a lot of it. You're spread pretty thin sometimes. So we've all lost people. I've lost people. You've lost people. Everybody's lost people in their life. They're important. They've passed on. So that one person that was in your life that's passed on, and God comes and he says, "Okay, Chris, I'm going to give you 1 hour with them." What would you tell them? And who is it?
I'm assuming he grew up a little bit. My son, Cameron, who we buried, the one, the twin that I was telling you was
Oh, yeah.
Bible for an hour. Assuming we could talk, and I like to think he's looking down on us and proud of us, and he smiles when, his little brother and little sister do something that makes him proud. Man,
Right.
if I could spend an hour with him and just hold him and hug him and
Oh.
really, tell him thank you for, one, making me a father for the first time.
Right.
Two, just thanking him because he gave me so many lessons and really taught me the value of being appreciative and really the value of being grounded and staying grounded and worrying about what matters the most. Just thank him because he's taught me so much, and he was only here for an hour, but he
Right.
taught me so much.
Wow.
And that is, I can't thank him enough. And I think God really blessed us. And it sounds crazy to say sometimes, but he really blessed me with that loss, because a younger me, right? Mike, you met me when I was a bit older and more grounded. And a younger me really thought I was invincible. I don't think I was ever truly cocky, but there was a bit of arrogance there.
Oh,
And,
I totally understand, because until I had my heart attack, which was, God, 12, 13 years ago now, dude, I was Superman. I could do anything, and then I realized, oh, wait, I am mortal. There is a kryptonite.
Once you realize there's so much that's not in your control,
Yeah.
a very humbling experience,
It is.
and
Absolutely.
extremely humbling. And so, yeah, I just thank him. I spend an hour and thank him, cry with him, hug him,
No.
but really thank him for everything he's taught me.
So what do you think he would tell you? What would he say to you?
I hope he says he's proud of me. I
Oh.
really, really, I if he's looking down and saying, "Daddy, I'm proud of you.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you. Love your kids, raise your kids. My kids want a hug, they're gonna get a hug.
Yeah.
My kids want to be tucked in at night, I'm gonna go tuck them in at night. I read to them, I read with them. I want them to feel loved. I never want them
Right.
to feel out of place in this world, and like they don't have someone to come to. And I know they're eventually gonna grow out of that and want their own space and stuff, I'm sure, but we're building a foundation, and I don't want to take any of this stuff for granted. So
Yeah.
if I'm traveling for business, I'm going to make sure I go FaceTime them and talk with them and make sure they get their time. If I can't be there physically, I still want to be there for them. So I hope he tells me he's proud of me, that he loves me. But more than anything, I want him to be proud of the man that he helped me become.
Oh, that's awesome. And it's I said that I'd have transparency in this, and you know me, I'm always honest with you. The thing, all these questions that I've thought about, well, what would I ask somebody if I had, somebody that I considered a mentor, somebody that I admire? What are some of the questions I would ask them? So, I've already asked the question to myself, and that last question, who is that person? Well, for me, it was my dad. And it would be the same thing. You know, I would just want to hang out with him and hug him and, you know, hold on to him. And my dad died when I was a young man. I was 22. And, you know, and I will always wonder what would he tell me, or what would I hope that he would tell me? And it was that he's proud of me, you know, of the man that I've become.
Yeah, know, I mean, so. At the end of the day, when our time is called and it's the end of the day, the close of the day for us, I just want to know that I lived a good life. I made an impression on people, and I was a good man, right? And so a man that my ancestors could be proud of, right? And ultimately, that's all I want in life. Yeah, I want to be comfortable. I want to take care of my family, and I want, you know, we want to live comfortably, and I want to make decent money. But at the end of the day, what really matters is, man, did I live a good life? Was I a good man? Was I a good husband? Was I a good father? Was I a good friend to people?
Right.
Right. Because it's like you want those that mean a lot to us who've gone on to just be proud of us. I think that's really what life should be about. And
absolutely.
I almost feel bad for them, right?
Exactly. When you think about all the sacrifices that, you know, that our ancestors have made for us, you know.
Absolutely. Yes.
You know, my family came over on a boat from Ireland during the potato blight, and, you know, starving to death, and come over here, and no telling what they suffered through, you know, to give me the opportunity that I have now for the things that I do, you know. So if I waste that, God, what a travesty, you know?
Yep, absolutely. My grandmother's dad in Okmulgee, Oklahoma, he was the very first black landowner in the county.
Oh, wow.
Yep, he was memorialized in the post office there.
How cool.
And everything. Yeah, it's awesome, right? But the sacrifices
that
he had to make.
Absolutely.
You had to be an older guy before you could even own land. So his parents, I'm sure, were slaves, or his grandparents were slaves.
Mm-hmm.
But to overcome that and become the first black landowner, and then to be able to die and leave land to his kids and grandkids and great grandkids, it's like,
and begin, man, that generational wealth, you know.
Exactly right.
The things that he had to go through to get there, you know, you have to, I feel like you have to do well. You have to do the best you can do to honor them.
Absolutely. You know?
Well, man, absolutely. I don't want to, like I say, I don't want to take all of your time, and I've already taken too much, I know, but I absolutely, completely appreciate you spending time with me, because like I say, I've always admired you. You've always been a mentor for me, and in a lot of different ways, and I just think you're a great person, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Yep, and I appreciate it. As you know, I was hesitant to do this, but I'm really glad that I did. And
good, good.
I wouldn't want my first podcast to be with anybody else, man.
Well, I appreciate it. Thank you very much, Chris.
Thanks.
So, everyone, that'll end it for us today. And I'll add all the places you can go find me for the podcast and that kind of stuff at the end. Chris, thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye-bye.
Bye.